to another episode of the Portable Magic Dispenser, a podcast for your school library, public library, whatever. My name is Lucas Maxwell, and I'm the librarian at Glenthorne High School. I hope everybody's okay. End of summer. I'm in the still in the bowels of the French countryside, sweltering, but it is cool. But anyway, I'm going to talk to you today about this Dungeons and Dragons mini adventure that I wrote. That's for new game masters, new dungeon masters. If you're a librarian and you're new to running it, and you are confused or overwhelmed, this should, I hope, help. So I wrote this little mini adventure, and it's for players level one. And essentially, I'm going to provide you with a link to the full adventure. I'm going to run you through the first little bit now, and hopefully it'll help you out. So your players are level one. What I suggest is that you do have to have some kind of knowledge of combat, and I put a link in the document that is like a link to a 5 minute long video about how combat works, and I'll run through a little bit with that. But I suggest a group of six players, but if you have less than that, it's fine. If you have more than that, it's fine. But my only advice is that you avoid having more than eight, because it can become quite difficult to manage. In the document, you'll find that I explain multiple things twice, because that's because in the document, I don't know. I'm giving the players multiple avenues to explore. Therefore, I don't know which one they're going to do first. And that's kind of, for me, the fun thing about D&D is that you can go make it like a sandbox type activity, and they can kind of explore where they want to go. Therefore, you're not kind of shoehorning them in. Okay? In the document, I've written a lot of things in italics. Anything in italics needs should be read aloud to the players, and you can of course adapt it. The whole thing is you can adapt it however you want. You'll be able to figure out your players, but I provide helpful terms like dice terms, and d4 is a four-sided, d6, etc., six-sided, on and on. I discuss something called difficulty class or DC, which is mentioned a lot in the document, and I provide a definition of that. And a DC is basically the number that a player must roll to achieve a task. So they roll a 20-sided dice and then add whatever bonus is applicable in that situation. The one I always use is that, let's say this character, a character in your game, wants to jump across like a chasm or a gap in a cliffside or something, just wants to jump across a hole, basically. He does not want to fall in the hole. You, as the game master, would say, okay, if that's an athletics check. And on their character sheet, there's an alphabetical list of skills near the left-hand side. It's in small print. And it should have a bonus next to that, or not a bonus, but a number next to the word athletics. It might be a negative number. Maybe they're not so strong. Whatever number it is, that number you add or subtract to the result you get when you roll a d20 or 20-sided dice. So the other thing you need as a game master is, in your head, you need a number that they need to achieve in order to jump successfully across that gap. So let's say it's 12, which is kind of considered moderate. Pretty easy, actually. So the player rolls 20-sided dice, gets a 10. You think maybe they failed, but their athletics bonus is a 3, so it's a 13, so they are able to jump across. And you, as the game master, should then describe how they do it. If you want to get them to describe how they do it, that's fine. It's not a big deal. But let's say another player rolls a 5, and then their bonus is only 1, and they get a 6 in total, way below 12. Therefore, they are going to fall down that hole, pit, whatever. You as a game master, have to decide, what are you going to do here? Are you going to make them fall to their death, and then, or are you going to let them try to grab the side? Maybe they take a little bit of damage. So, regarding tasks, you can put whatever number you want for a difficulty class or DC, but there's a helpful chart on the dungeon in the Dungeon Master's Guide, and so a very easy task would be 5 or above. An easy task would be 10 or above, moderate 15 or above, hard 20, very hard 25, nearly impossible 30. And you can roll a 30 if you have later, as characters get much more powerful, you can roll a 30 if you've got obviously a plus 10 or something to a skill. So I've provided a synopsis for the game that I've created for the little quest, And what I've said is, please do not read this to the players. Obviously, this is something you should read in advance. The idea is that this mad druid named Nog, N-O-G, has taken up residence in a forest called the Smogwood and is creating an army of woodland creatures to do his bidding, to create chaos. He's created this weak kind of portal in the Smogwood from another realm called the Feywild. He hopes to create a stronger portal in a nearby town called Stow, Stow, specifically in a shop called Mame's Magic Jar. The owner of the shop, Mame, is working with Nog, and I have a whole description of that, which I'll go into in a minute. Nog's woodland creatures are wreaking havoc in Stow, where the players begin their adventure. So Nog has also done the following. He's lured in an employee of a local inn. It's a little goblin named Okay to do his bidding. He's kidnapped members of a local ragtag adventuring crew called the Meteors. And he's holding the prized possession of a traveling bard. The bard's name is Belnar, and Nog has his mandolin, and he's holding it for ransom, making Belnar do all kinds of things. He had the mandolin stolen by a herd of rabbits. So Nog is made, he's quote unquote awakened a bunch of animals, and he's made these animals super smart, and they're doing his bidding. And they're stealing stuff, and they're causing all kinds of problems. So to find Nog and stop him, they have to work together, and they have to ask the right questions. So this is what you should read to your players, really. Your adventure begins in the small town of Stow, which is situated along the River Wist and nestled between the Smogwood Forest and the Dusk Lake. With a population of just over 100, there isn't much going on. A handful of humans walk purposely through the quiet, muddy streets, passing by homes, most of which have their windows shut. And now, this right now is a good opportunity to stop there and go around the table and ask your players, your students, why they've come to Stow. And they can decide if they are there together or if they're arriving separately. You don't need to roll dice. It's just simply a discussion of their characters. If they don't know or they don't feel comfortable speaking up, then just move on. However, if any of the students ask, say, I want to ask someone on the street why they have their window shut in nice weather. You can read this, or if you get them to like just say hello to anybody passing by or anything like that, you can get them to randomly choose someone, an elderly man with a cane walking slowly down the street. He stops and rubs his chin as he considers you, and he says, "You're not from around here," and he says, "We have our window shut because of all the flying creatures buzzing in and out and scurrying all over the place." And he says, "Why, just the other day I had a seagull come straight through my window and take off with my socks. Fine socks they were too." And he then moves on. He doesn't want to talk to them anymore. You can carry on the conversation if you want. If they say, "We want to go on a quest to save your socks, sir," that's something you might have to figure out on your own because I haven't written anything for retrieving this man's socks. Maybe you can find his socks at the end. That would be fine. You could do that. You could find his socks at the end in the in Nog's camp, which we'll get to. The fair weather. There's a cool breeze blowing through the center of the town, and this is where I'm gonna set up the kind of the situation, the scenario. They would see signs swinging in the wind from three of the buildings. So as I said, it's a small town. There are three kind of main buildings in the town, or shops, I should say. One of the signs says the Clumsy Dolphin, and the sign depicts an upside-down dolphin that is diving towards an octopus. It appears to be an inn of some kind. And what they would notice as they see this sign is that there's an owl perched on the sign, and it flies off as they approach. Now, if they want to interact with the owl or say, "Well, what is that going on with that owl?" You can get them to roll a perception check. And to do this, they just roll a 20-sided dice, a d20, and they add their perception bonus. And their player's perception bonus is located, again, on the alphabetical list of skills on their character sheets, just left of the center of the sheet. So the player rolls the d20 and adds their bonus. And what they need to get is 11. That's the DC or difficulty class. So therefore, if they roll and add their bonus and it's 11 or higher, you can read the following to them. You notice that the owl is missing its right eye. If they roll below 11, they notice nothing special about the owl. If they try to attack the owl, it flies off way too quickly. Now, the owl is, of course, the mad druid Nog. He can wild shape into an owl, and he's watching. people coming into the town of Stowe to see if anyone's going to cause trouble for him or anything like that. He's watching. So that would be the first sign, is that they see this owl and that sign. And then before they decide to move into the shop, you can say, you see another sign that says, on another building, this is Fraz's Fine Goods and Wares. And then a third sign, which reads Mame's Magic Jar. Now this is where, which I like, it's you can just simply say to the players, where do you want to go? And it's very important, in my opinion, to let them have this kind of agency, this kind of ownership over the game, where they can just choose where you want. You can't, you should never be like, no, you can't do that. It should always be, you can try, or yes, you can go. Unfortunately, you might have to just make stuff up if you can. You kind of have to draw from movies or books or anything you've worked on, anything, any kind of plot you can think of. It doesn't have to be tied to the main plot. It can be anything that is just arbitrary. If they decide to split up, okay, three of us are going to go into Fraz's, three of us are going to go into the Clumsy Dolphin. It's no problem. All you do is you look at the first three, okay, you're going into the Clumsy Dolphin, we're going to start with you. You spend a few minutes on them, and you say, okay, that's good, we're going to pause now, we're going to move to the group who's gone into Fraz's, okay? Start with one group, move on to the next, okay? The Clumsy Dolphin. So the Clumsy Dolphin gets its name from its owner, whose name is Skovlot, and that's a retired dwarf and a druid who once, while venturing in a dangerous tomb, wild shaped into a dolphin, jumped down a waterfall and nearly died. And Skov is a very friendly dwarf with wild red hair who will happily tell adventurers her tale if they're friendly to her as well. Skov has a fairy friend whose name is Thunderwing. She rescued Thunderwing from the tomb that mentioned above. Thunderwing will not speak to adventurers and tends to shy away from them. So that is just something for you as the game master to know. Now, what you read to the players is, as you push the door open to the Clumsy Dolphin, the first thing that hits you is the smell of musts and sweat. Two large cobblestone tables sit empty in the middle of the room. There's a large fireplace on the east wall, above which a cracked mirror has been hung. It appears to have been meticulously put back together. You count seven people in here, a mixture of humans, gnomes, and halflings. They don't seem to pay you much notice and appear to be engaged in their own discussions and lunch. The bright afternoon light spills through the windows and across the floor. The humming of bees can be heard in the inn, and looking up, you see a swarm of them. So the first thing, they got these bees. They see these bees and hear them. Behind the bar stands a smiling dwarf with a shock of wild red hair. On her shoulder sits what's to be a fairy flitting around her head. Okay, now is another opportunity to get the players to describe their characters. You could simply say something to them like, if I was sat in the Clumsy Dolphin and you came through the door, what would I see? Again, they may not want to do that, but in my experience, some of the students really enjoy this opportunity to describe what their character looks like, what they're wearing, how they act as they come in. In the past, when I've done this type of thing, like walking into an inn, they often wanted to put on a performance. That's fine. If they want to do that, they can roll a performance check, which is essentially rolling a 20-sided dice, d20, adding their performance bonus, which is also located in their skills section of their character sheet. If you need pre-made character sheets, I will also provide a link for that. But once characters have described themselves coming into the inn, if they want to, there's different things they can do. If they want to look around, they can roll a perception bonus again, same one we described above. And let's see, if they roll a 15 or higher, so they need a 15, it's pretty high, it's a little bit harder on this one. They would notice a key attached to a thin leather cord hanging from Skov's neck. Anything under 15, and Skov is simply bustling about, moving around too much, and they don't notice it. If they ask about the bees, Skov would say, the darn things have been here for a week now. They won't leave no matter what I try. They stay up there in the rafters, but every once in a while, they come down and bother the patrons. It's driving me up the wall. The bees are of course, some sort of spy for Nog, okay? And if the players try to get rid of these bees or attack them, they move as a group through a hole in the roof and disappear. The bees have become super intelligent now that Nog has cast his influence over him. If they kind of attack the mirror or approach the mirror, they cannot because it's been attached to the wall with a magical item called Sovereign Glue, which is something that cannot really be undone unless with magic, strong magic. The mirror is something that Skov took back with her from her adventures in the tomb. She was sucked into this mirror with her best friend Frey, another druid friend, and they had to destroy it to escape, along with another warlock friend named Moira, and they all got trapped in there and they destroyed this mirror, nearly died. Skov will happily tell them this story if you want. And the thing is, you shouldn't say, don't just say you can't take the mirror or don't do anything with the mirror. If they say, look, I want to take this mirror off the wall, you say, oh, you can try, roll a strength check. Same thing, D20 strength bonus. However, in your head, you know it doesn't matter, but you want to give them the option, illusion that they can try stuff. And you can describe it like you grab the side and you just start to pull and nothing happens. It seems like really struck, stuck. So let's see. Skov, if this happens, Skov will yell from the bar, there's no amount of pulling that will get that mirror off, my friend. Why don't you come over and get some food? You look hungry. If they insist on trying to get this mirror off the wall, sometimes the younger students will want to do this. You can have one of the patrons tell them that it's magically stuck there. And again, if they cannot get this hint, another patron, a huge burly half-orc named Grum, will stand up and say, you better not cause any trouble in here. Skov's a hero, and we won't stand for any nonsense. And with that, five other people stand up and stare at you, their arms crossed across their chest. So it's evident that they really love Skov, and they're not going to put up with any nonsense. So if they don't stop and if they mess around, if they attack Grum, you can simply have them outnumbered immediately by patrons and all sorts, and then beat, not beaten up, but thrown out of the bar and not allowed back in. If that happens, they will lose a couple of quest possibilities, but that's not the end of the world. They can still move on to the end of the main quest, so that should be okay. Or that will be okay. And if none of that happens and they just go up to Skov and ask for food, she'll have the following food for sale: grill a chili stew for 3 copper, broiled salmon and potatoes for 3 silver and 2 copper, bog beetle dumplings for 4 copper. The characters will have money already. When they make a character, you get starting wealth. And the thing is, I can't really tell you how much because it depends entirely on what class you choose. So if it's like a ranger or a rogue or a bard, all that stuff, that everything depends. Like monks don't get very much. It all depends on what you choose. She'll also sell tea for 1 copper, coffee for 2 copper, milk for 1 copper. Water is free, but not really recommended. She has a yellow green drink called Stowdew, for 5 copper. This is something I've said in the past to other people as well. When you play sometimes with 14, 15-year-olds or even younger, they will sometimes, because they're in this fun situation, they're getting, they might be getting excited to play this game, and they're in an inn slash tavern, which is a very common kind of location in Dungeons and Dragons. Sometimes you'll get a player who just is obsessed with, like, I want to buy alcohol, I want to buy beer and stuff like that. I don't allow any of that. I do not need to have conversations with parents or other members of the school asking why I'm pretend who don't understand Dungeons and Dragons, maybe why I'm pretending to sell alcohol to students. I don't need that conversation in my life. So there's none of that. Stow Dew is like Mountain Dew, obviously, and it's disgusting. But you make your own assumptions. The players can also stay the night in the Clumsy Dolphin for the 7 silver per night per character. Each room comes with a bed, a footlocker, a small novella called Skov's Adventures in the Tomb of Death, which details her time in the jungle fighting zombies and saving the world. Alternatively, players can reduce the cost if they tell Skov a story that she enjoys. You can do this if they complain about the cost of them staying or they don't want to do that. They don't want to pay. She'll say, tell you what, tell me a good story and I'll take some silver off the cost of the room. This is a chance again to let the players role play a little bit. They can roll a d20 and add their performance bonus to the roll. So here's how I've created a table in the document that will provide a breakdown in the price reduction. If they roll a 1 to 10, there's no change in cost. 11 and 15, the cost is reduced to 6 silver per night. 16 to 19, 5 silver per night. 20 plus, they get it for 4 silver per night. It's almost 50% reduction. If they ask Skov about any work or jobs or anything interesting happening, her face will crunch up into a grimace as she wipes the top of the bar. She says, there's been some strange lights that have been spotted over in the Smogwood, and it scared the daylights out of the Meteors, who are a little adventuring group from right here in Stowe. They've got a camp set up in the outskirts in town. You might want to speak to Roddy. He's in charge over there. I'd go myself, but I'm retired. And with that, she leans over the bar and shouts at the customers, Have any of you seen OK? That lazy goblin's supposed to have taken the trash out ages ago. And the customers who acknowledge Skov, they shake their heads no. And as I mentioned, OK is a goblin that Skov saved from the wild. She lets him work in the clumsy dolphin and pays him well. What Skov doesn't tell people is that Skov herself is actually very rich, and she only runs the inn because she genuinely loves meeting new people and hearing about their adventures. You don't need to say this to the players. This is for your knowledge. The goblin went to find wood to burn for the hearth and was kidnapped by Nog's army of squirrels. OK was then promised more gold than he could imagine if he'd act as a spy for Nog, and he took that deal. If the players ask more about OK the goblin, people in the inn will tell him that he is generally quiet and reserved and enjoys being himself, and they cannot recall the last time they saw him. If players ask the other people within the clumsy dolphin about the lights. Grum, the half-orc, will say, "I seen those lights 3 days ago after a fishing trip. I made the night seem like day, they did. I don't know what was going on. I know a lot of people are pretty scared in those woods now." So the Smogwood, again, the players don't know this, but the Smogwood has become the base of operations of a mad druid named Nog, which we've already discussed. The lights are will-o-wisps that Nog has brought with him. I'll discuss those later. Nog is clearing space in the woods for a temporary fortress he's building using animals he's controlling with his mind. He will take over Stow if he's not stopped, and then gradually take over the realm. If they decide to go straight to the adventurers' camp, you can jump to that section. Or if they say, "Well, we want to go out," and then go to the other shops. I have everything in the document. So I hope that was helpful. That was just a really quick intro on how to start getting players to roll dice, add their bonuses. There's no combat yet. There's plenty of combat at the end. excuse me about that. The whole session probably will take 2 hours, I would imagine. So I would run this over 2 lunch hours and just get them to learn how to play the game, really, and get you as a if you're new to it to figure out how the rolling works. The other dice are often rolled when you're talking about damage or you're talking about other things that you need to, calibrate or calculate. But what you need to remember, I think, mainly as a new dungeon master, in my opinion, is let them try. Don't say no, you can't. But the other thing is, which I mention in the guide that I've written, try to avoid having them re-roll all the time. I've talked about this before. Like, let's say you want them to unlock they want to unlock a door. They've got the thieves' tools with them, and they want to unlock a door with a lockpick. The number, the DC, is 12, and they roll a 10. And with adding their bonus, their dexterity bonus, and you say you were unsuccessful. And some new players will be like, "Well, I'm just going to roll again. I'm just going to keep rolling until I get the 12." You can't let them do that because it takes away the entire purpose of it. They have failed. There have to be consequences to that failure. Maybe the lock picks break in the lock. You can it's broken it. Maybe they can try again later, but the DC becomes much higher. Maybe the DC's jump from 12 to 15 because they're frustrated because the lock pick's broken. Maybe the noise they make trying to pick the lock has alerted somebody. On and on. You have to make it realistic. They can't just in real life. If you're having, yes, you can keep trying, but it doesn't mean you're going to just automatically succeed eventually. So that's something to keep in mind. I hope it is useful to you. And I hope you have fun with this adventure. I call it Trouble in the Smogwood. And yeah, that's it really. I hope you enjoy it. Take care.